Greetings from the Southern Cohort of the UC Coro System-Wide Leadership Collaborative. Our cohort challenge is titled Best Practices for Leading System-Wide Change Projects, and our deliverables include the production of podcast interviews with influential people in the area of change management theory and applications. My name is Colin Dimmick. I am the Assistant Vice Chancellor of Environment, Health, and Safety at the University of California, Los Angeles. I'm joined in this interview by my colleagues Terry Winbush and Kiri Bass. Our guest for this podcast is Michael Beck, the Administrative Vice Chancellor for UCLA, who has served for many years as a change leader in multiple academic and city government management positions.
I'm Terry Winbush, the Senior Director of Labor Relations and Employee Relations for the UC San Diego campus.
I'm Kiri Bass. I'm the Senior Director for Organizational Performance and Communication at UCLA Housing and Hospitality Services.
Hello, I'm Michael Beck. I'm the Administrative Vice Chancellor for UCLA.
Michael, can you tell us a little about your background and experience with change management?
So it actually happened early on when I started at UCR after actually graduation, as I was hired for a position. And everything I looked at, I always wanted to figure out a way in which we could do something better. And so we just continued to identify and sort of believed early on in this concept of continuous improvement or Kaizen. And so everything I did was always focusing on how do you improve the service to the constituents in any way you can. And then after about 15 years of this, then the City of Riverside actually hired me as a change agent for the university, and then ultimately then ended up at the City of Pasadena, really I think being hired as a change agent. So it's been a significant part of, significant part of my life.
What does the phrase people side of change management mean to you?
So almost all change involves people. And so when we look at the people management aspect of it, the key is how are we impacting people? How are we improving their lives? How are we improving the way in which they work? Or how are we improving the service for people? And if we don't take into consideration that we're expecting real human beings to be either impacted by the change or implementing the change, and we forget the fact that we actually have to bring those individuals along, we're going to fail at change management. I don't think you can be successful in sort of dictating change. You have to figure out what are the implications of change, communicate change effectively, make sure you're explaining why change is important, and recognize the fact that people are going to react to change in a different way, and make sure that you have an opportunity to listen to people's reaction to the change and understand what change is possible.
What is different about change in higher education versus change in corporate?
I think there are different types of change management, and we may potentially stereotypically view change at a corporation different, but I think it's the technique that's different, not necessarily the organization. And so there's one which is really sort of more of a top-down directive of how we're going to change our operation, and it's well-defined, and everybody just needs to undertake the training or process changes, and it's one of those things you sort of get on board or you get out. And then there's a more collaborative change management process, usually a little slower in the effort, but it involves getting a lot more people involved in defining what change looks like and how we implement change versus potentially having a group define what that change should be.
You touched on something really important that I'm hoping you can expand on, which is this idea of there's kind of two different types of change management. What causes us to choose one over the other in different situations?
So I think part of it depends on the urgency of it. So if you have a safety issue, it's very conducive to a type of urgent change, and people want to understand that change has to occur and are more receptive to just tell me what needs to happen and we're going to be modified. Where normally if you're in a sort of regular operating environment and you want to make a fundamental change, you want to change a financial system, you want to move from quarters to semesters, academic year, that's going to need to be a much more thoughtful and deliberative process in gaining input from a lot of constituents understanding what the concerns would be, what some of the advantages and opportunities would be, and then moving through that process in a thoughtful, meaningful, and you could say maybe slow, but more drawn out process so that everybody can get up to speed and understand and feel comfortable that they're not moving too quickly. I would say the goal with change is to bend the organization, don't break it.
How do you recognize when you need to engage in or ask for a change?
So part of it is understanding where we are as an organization. If we're finding that our customers are frustrated with the way in which they engage with us, or we're losing customers, or the employees themselves are frustrated, maybe we're not able to retain employees, there's been a lot of turnover, maybe the organization has a reputation and you're not being successful in recruiting top talent. Those are all indicators that say that some change needs to occur, either process change, could be management change, could be operational procedural changes, and it could be some fundamental systems. If you're looking around and you're stagnant, then that's also a good indicator that you probably need to be evolving, I think is a better way of defining it sometimes than change. Theoretically, change is the only constant, because we're really all the time, we're constantly changing, even though we may not call it change or we may not be actively thinking about it.
What do you see as advantages and disadvantages of a centralized change management office?
So from the advantages perspective, I think there are a number. One would be the opportunity to implement consistent changes or change processes in different parts of the organization simultaneously, so that the organization has some coherence to it as the way in which it's evolving. You wouldn't want one part of the organization to be changing in one direction and another part of the organization changing in a conflicting or opposite directions. There also is the opportunity for individuals to learn from implementations in other areas of the department, so they can be more effective in the way in which the organizational culture is going to process change. Some of the disadvantages could be is that you become less creative and you may become not as connected to the individual organizations that you might be if change was being driven through individual offices. I don't think there is a better or a worse. I think it depends on the change you want to make. For instance, at UCLA, we're undertaking significant systems changes. Having the same sort of organizational unit process those changes, I think, has substantial value. There's some training and oversight that can be beneficial and brought to the table with a central group, but at the end of the day, the team and the group has to own it. And so I think having them feel as it's not having sort of outsiders come in and tell them how to change their group, that would be less effective than it will ultimately be in allowing the group to make the changes.
Yeah, there's also the question of building that change capacity within the various units.
Right, and that's, I think, the downside of distributed change management is the issue of being able to build the capacity and whether that's efficient for having change sort of agents or individuals that are managing change distributed through the organization, because I think they can become disconnected from the overall mission of the institution. The maybe one of the optimals, which is the way in which we're handling it in administration, is that we have a core team that's facilitating the tools in each of the departments, but really empowering the departments to be able to make the changes, but also taking advantage of the learning curve and the skills that individuals with specific backgrounds and training might be able to bring.
What is the most important aspect of communication during a change process?
So, absent the whole concept of communication being the most important part of change management.
Right, it's such a huge thing right there.
Yeah, I think that the key part of communication is really making sure that, one, we're listening, right? So when we talk about communications, we actually often think of it really as one way, but I think really effective communication is two way. And so part of it is making sure that we're listening to the customers that are being involved, are impacted by the change, or if we're doing it because of trying to improve customer service, make sure we understand what the needs and interests and desires of the customer actually are. And then engaging those that are going to be individuals that are engaged in the processes that are potentially going to change, and make sure that we're getting their input and the opportunity for them to add value to the change process. And then communicating to the greater team and the greater organization, make sure that we're talking about the not just the what, but the how and the why, right? Particularly the why. And that's, I think, one of the areas where we forget to do. And so people tend to think of change for the sake of change, and that's not going to gain a lot of acceptance. And so the key is to understand, why are we making the change? Is it for a safety purpose? Is it to reduce cost? Is it to improve customer service? Is it to reduce processing? Is it intended to reduce bureaucratic red tape? What is ultimately the goal? And then make sure that we're effectively communicating that. And make sure that we're regularly communicating. You shouldn't start a process and have a large communication effort, and then, you know, 6 months into it, then come back and say, okay, we're all done, right? We're all changed now, right?
What do you think is the best strategy for recognizing and then dealing with resistance to change?
So the listening piece is the big one on trying to understand the resistance. And I would say when you're in the middle of implementing change, make sure that you're actively in connecting with customers, actively connecting with employees on how the new processes or procedures are happening. Make sure that what you anticipated in your plan is actually being realized. And you can do that through surveys. You can do that through sort of walking around and interacting. You can do it through focus groups. There's lots of ways of actually getting reaction to what's actually happening. And it's important to do that, so that you can adjust the implementation if that's necessary.
What is a reliable mechanism for handling unexpected circumstances that arise during the change process?
So I think part of it is to anticipate unintended sort of process challenges that occur within a change management. Because again, we talked about this is impacting people, and people are not always predictable from our plan. And this is, I think the intent here is that to make sure that we're flexible and not being so committed to the plan that we put in place that if there's a need to deviate, we force everybody back into the plan. I think that can be destructive. The key is also to make sure that we don't deviate so far from the plan that we're missing the ultimate objective. But in most cases, you don't have to go all the way back to start and find a new path to go around. You just have to identify, where can I get around this obstacle and get back on the path that I wanted to move on?
Are there tools that you use to make sure you're on the path so you see those deviations?
Well, if it's a significant process change or let's call it a UC path type implementation, then you should have measurements that we're undertaking along the way that we're measuring progress toward change. And so when we're deviating from our expectations of outcomes, then that's an opportunity for us to reevaluate where we are and where we ultimately need to get.
What are your methods for tracking the changes that you are engaged in?
So we use a couple tools today for most of the changes, particularly around work engagement, is we use an annual survey instrument to be able to track the changes that are making, and we can evaluate whether what we've implemented over the last year as to whether that's been effective or not based on the outcome of the survey results. We also look at, depending on the change, if it's a reducing cost or reducing labor burden, we can measure the effectiveness based on those metrics. There are ways of tracking change. And it is important to make sure that you're tracking, because you could end up in a scenario in which the opposite has occurred.
How do you measure the potential for a proposed change to bring about improvement? Is it feasible to run performance models in advance?
It's another great question. I think the harder one to answer is the concept of running performance models. And there are certainly circumstances in which you could run performance models, and you certainly want to be able to anticipate what type of change is going to occur, particularly if it's intended to reduce process time or reduce cost or reduce wait time or other things, is to have a target that you're focused on achieving and then measuring against that target and adjusting if you're not meeting that target. I think sometimes the target is more elusive than you would want it to be, and so you also have to be careful not to be so focused on what your original expectation is, but make sure that you're making the right movements toward the goal, but you may not actually achieve the goal that you had anticipated achieving. But getting back to the sort of focus of the question, I think it is very difficult to try and anticipate ultimately all aspects of what change is going to occur.
Along those lines, what are the signals that a proposed change should be reconsidered or terminated?
So I think a couple areas. One is if you're not seeing the reaction. So if you're, let's to say that you're not getting the performance issues out of the system that you had anticipated, and so you have everybody trying to use the system and it just can't handle the demand, and so your customers are getting frustrated, unable to complete their transaction, and ultimately you're not achieving the objective, which was to do more transactions per hour than you were doing before, and you may be losing transactions, you may be losing customers, and so then you need to make an adjustment. And it may be so bad that you actually may need to terminate and restart if the system really doesn't have the capability to undertake what you had anticipated doing. And so you should always have a plan in that type of change effort of being able to really undo it. And if I go back to UC Path as an example, in at least for UCLA, and I believe it's the same on each of the campuses, when they go live, there is a sort of nuclear option to revert to the prior pay period and reissue those checks, recognizing that those are going to be basically 90 to 95% of the people are going to get the same paycheck they got from the previous period, and that we could reissue those checks very quickly through the old payroll system if, in fact, we had a catastrophic failure on an implementation. Now, fortunately, none of that existed, but there was a plan in place in case that happened.
Another follow-up to that, what are the challenges involved in realizing and following through with a decision to unplug a proposed change?
So there's naturally going to be a lot of resistance to do that because nobody wants to be associated with a failed effort. And so the champions for that change management are likely going to be resistant to acknowledging that it was a failed effort and be willing to describe it as a failed effort.
Because if it's attached to individuals too strongly, they're going to resist that termination no matter what.
Right. I think that's if in fact everybody's done what they should have done, right, and you've sort of implemented according to plan and it didn't work, then we shouldn't be looking for somebody's head associated with that outcome. We should say that we tried, and trying is the right approach. And if people were sort of cut off at the knees every single time they failed at something, we're going to create a culture that is less innovative, less creative, because everybody's going to be afraid to try something new. And so we have to create an organization that says it's okay to fail as long as we've learned something in the process.
So what are the important characteristics senior leaders should show when introducing and managing change initiatives within an organization?
Well, I would say enthusiasm, support, empathy, making sure that when we're talking about certain levels of changes that the leadership is involved in that change as well. So if we said we're going to do a new process improvement that has, let's say, for instance, everybody has to go online to process a parking permit or something, make sure that the leadership is doing that also, right? They're just not having somebody else do it for them and not having to engage in the system. And also recognize the fact that the organization is going to be under some level of stress during particularly a significant change management effort, and to be sort of understanding of that and anticipate that the organization for other accomplishments, we might need to be a little more relaxed during a significant change effort, because in many ways some of the employees are going to be doing double duty, both their existing responsibilities plus responsibilities associated with managing and implementing the change effort. And so make sure that we're being responsive and empathetic to the fact that everything that they did before may not be getting done to the same level that it was previously. And when you implement the change, there's going to be a learning curve. And so again, be supportive, make sure that people feel that they have the right tools to be successful. And to the extent you can, try and make it fun.
I'm sure there's questions you think that we should have asked that we didn't. Is there anything else in your mind that you think is particularly important in change management that you haven't covered?
I mean, I think it goes back to one of the things we talked about earlier is, let's not always think about change as change. If we can think of it more as an evolution of our service delivery model in many cases. There are certainly large change programs that we'll need to refer to. And then ask the question, why are we doing change, right? Everybody's always fearful that, and many times we're doing change because we need to do, constantly being changed. But if it isn't associated with a direct outcome expectation, and certainly if it's not meeting that expectation, then I think we have to ask the question as an organization whether that's the right effort to undertake. Certainly I've seen change management efforts that I wish we had been more aggressive at moving, and there's others that I wish we were a little more thoughtful in the way in which we implemented the changes. We just have to recognize that we have to be changing. Our organization has to be evolving in an effort for us to continue to be relevant, because everybody else is changing around us. So even if you're the best at what you do and you're the number one public university, you have to recognize that every other university in the country is trying to knock you off of that position. That everybody else is changing in an effort to catch up. And so you need to constantly be looking at how to, sort of improve your game. This happens, I think, frequently is when you are sort of the model, is you forget to look at other organizations who actually might have a better model. Lots of good ideas can come from other places. And so don't be afraid. And in fact, I strongly encourage people to be looking at what your competitors are doing, looking at what your peers are doing, looking at, are there things in which we can bring from other places and implement. And then when you do that, be careful, because every organization is different. So don't cookie cutter from one place and expect the same outcome at another organization. Make sure you're customizing the change for the organization based on the goals and the culture of that organization. I think generally you ask some really thoughtful questions, and hopefully this has been helpful.
I hope so too.
The music in this podcast is entitled The Fifth Life and is by Circus Marcus.